start your day to your match the base at all tough should I involve Rep Baruch Krasna.
The beginning of this week's Sedras Shoftim, we are told about a situation, Ki Pole Nimcha Dovar, if you have a question which you're unsure about. So the Pasuk says, V'kamtav Alisa, you should go up, you should ask the Kayin, or the Shofet who will be in those days. The Torah says, and we should go up, at the time when there was a Sanhedrin in the Beis HaMikdash, we should go to the Sanhedrin to present the question which we are unsure about, and we will receive the answer from the Sanhedrin. And then the Pasuk continues, and it says that if there will be somebody who disagrees with the psak of the Beis Din, so there's a very serious consequence of somebody, a Zokin Mamre, of a member of the Sanhedrin, who doesn't follow the psak. And we're told that Sasser min hadovah she'agizut ha'yom min ha'smol, we're told we have to follow the psak of the Beis Din, whether it's to the right or to the left. And the Sefer Chinuch tells us that this is a very important, a crucial mitzvah to follow the psak of the Beis Din, that even the Dayonim are not able to argue with the psak of the Beis Din, because he says unless you have one uniform psak which everyone follows, he says there'll be a churban hadas, if everyone can decide on their own what to do, how to pasken, so you'll have one person saying this thing, one person saying another thing, and it will be like shtei Torahs, you'll have two different Torahs, we'll never arrive at a clear psak halacha. And therefore, Sefer Chinuch explains that the Torah is very particular, that yes, we can have a discussion between the Dayanim, but after the psak has been given from the Sanhedrin, there is a chiyuv le'sasur, everyone has to follow the psak to avoid a machlokas in halacha. Now, this is the ideal situation, where we have the Sanhedrin that can give us a psak. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, tells us that the Gemara makes a statement, Asida Torah Shetishtakach Miyisrael, that eventually the Torah will be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. And then Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, what does that mean? Chas v'shalom, he says, Shetishtakach Torah Miyisrael. How can it be that the Torah will be forgotten? It says, Kilo Yisishachach Mipi Zara. We have a haftacha, we have a guarantee that the Torah will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. So what does the Gemara mean by making the statement that Asida Torah Shetishtakach Miyisrael? So Rav Shimon Bar Yochai explains, says, what does it mean? That in the future, Shela Yimsa Halacha Brura or Mishna Brura B'makayim Echad. That means we won't have a clarity in Halacha. Rashi says, we'll never have a situation Shela Yeheba Machlaikas. There will always be machlokes in halacha. And you see from the Gemara that, yes, there's this ideal situation where everything can be clarified, but now that we're in Golos, as we learned in Eicha, Malka, Vesareha, Bagoyim, Ein Torah, after the Churban, we don't have the same clarity in Torah that we once had, and we're left with a situation where we're told there will be machlokes, and this is part of the tragedy of the Churban. We cannot have a clear answer in halacha. And as we know, you know, if you have a shaila in Hilchos Shabbos, anything, you open up a sefer, you'll see that there's you know, many cases. You'll see this one says it's asa, this one says it's mutter. And this is the situation now where we don't have the Sanhedrin, that we have many different psakim, many different approaches in halacha. I wanted to deal with a question which presents itself in this situation where we have machlokes in halacha. I think this is a question which we can all relate to. Possibly we've all experienced the question ourselves. So I'll present the question in a practical way, with a practical application of it. And I'll just take a situation which sort of a classic machlokes in Hilchos Shabbos. I'm not discussing this case, and I'm not coming down on either side of this question. But this is possibly one of the classic shailas on Shabbos where there are two approaches. So, opening bottle tops on Shabbos, metal bottle tops, grape juice bottles, etc. So we know there are those who say you can't open them, there are those who say you can open them. Rishrol Yaakov Fisher writes in his Shabbos Forum that you can open metal tops, he would open them himself on Shabbos. And on the other hand, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others say that you cannot open certainly metal bottle tops on Shabbos, and there are different minhagim. Many people do open bottles on Shabbos, many people do not. So, imagine you have a situation where there are two people on Shabbos at the Shabbos table. One person does open bottle tops on Shabbos, and one person does not open bottle tops on Shabbos. And they come to make Kiddush, and they find that the bottle of grape juice had not been opened before Shabbos. So the question is, can the person who does not open bottle tops ask the other person to open the bottle of grape juice for him on Shabbos so that he should be able to make Kiddush with this grape juice? So the question is, can somebody who holds that something is osur on Shabbos ask another person who holds that it's mutter on Shabbos to do this thing for him? And this question is not limited to Hilchos Shabbos. It comes up more often on Hilchos Shabbos because Shabbos comes up maybe more regularly. It comes up once a week, and there are many different shailas on Hilchos Shabbos. But this is the question. Can somebody who holds something's asur ask somebody else who holds its mutter to do that thing for him on Shabbos? Yeah, okay, so we'll discuss that. It does make a difference. Now, another question. Even if we say that the person who holds this asur cannot ask the other person to open the bottle for him, let's say the person who holds its mutter wants to make Kiddush himself, would the person who holds its asur be able to give him the bottle of grape juice so that he can open it on Shabbos? Now, what's the question? As normally, we say there is a principle of lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. The Gemara says if you have a nazir, somebody who's not allowed to have grape juice, to have wine, so you're not allowed to give him a cup of wine if you will drink it, because that is lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. You're not allowed to supply somebody with the conditions where they will be over an aveira. Now, this person who thinks something is asur, so is he allowed to supply the person who thinks it's mutter with an opportunity to do this thing? Now, does the person who thinks it's asur take it so far that there would even be a lifnei iver, as it were? He wouldn't be allowed to supply the other person with the opportunity to do this act, which he holds as asur, and which the other person thinks is mutter. So we'll come back to that later on. Let's just first concentrate on the first question we asked. Somebody who holds something's asur, is he able to ask somebody who thinks it's mutter to do that act for him? That's the next point I'm going to mention. That will lead on to the discussion. That's the first point in the discussion. Yeah. So the Aruch HaShabbos discusses this in great detail. I'm going to share with you the discussion of the Aruch HaShabbos. This is in Chelek Gimel, Perek Chafei Sif Lamed Hei, and also at the end of Chelek Gimel Simon Yud Tes. And he says like this. And he quotes the sugya that Mr. Mankoff mentioned. He starts off like this. We know that there's an issur of Amir al-Akum. That means when it comes to Shabbos, we're not allowed to tell a goy to do work for us. On Shabbos Amir al-Akum, we cannot tell an Akum, a non-Jew, to do work for us on Shabbos. Now, what's with Amir al-Yisrael? It means telling a Yisrael to do work for us on Shabbos. Now, so when is this applicable? Of course, if it's Shabbos itself, then of course you can't tell somebody who has to keep Shabbos to do work for you on Shabbos. So what's the question? So as we said, if somebody is very relevant in the summer, if somebody brings in Shabbos early, let's say after Plagah Mincha, and he goes to shul, comes back, and then, as often happens, you know, just after Shabbos comes in, you realize the hot plate's off, the fridge isn't set for Shabbos, the heating, the fans, whatever it is, and you want to know how you can arrange it to be sorted out for Shabbos. So, but you've already brought in Shabbos yourself. So can you tell your neighbor who's Jewish but hasn't yet brought in Shabbos? And of course, it's before Shkia, before sunset, so he doesn't have to keep Shabbos yet if he hasn't started Shabbos. So can somebody who's brought in Shabbos ask somebody who hasn't yet brought in Shabbos to do work for him on the Shabbos for one of them and not the other? So in the Simon Reish Samach Gimel, at the end of Simon Reish Samach Gimel, so the last sif, The Shulchan Aruch brings the opinion of the Rashba, and he says that if somebody has brought in Shabbos, he's allowed to ask somebody else who has not brought in Shabbos to do work for him. In other words, we don't say there's a similar case to Amir al-Akum with a Yisrael, but if as long as that other Yisrael has not brought in Shabbos, you're allowed to ask him to do work for you, even though you have brought in Shabbos.
He's not allowed to ask a goy.
You can ask a goy, because until Nacht, that means while it's Ben Hashmoshes, so certainly before Ben Hashmoshes, you can ask a goy, provided it's for a good reason. And you don't do it stam, if there's a good reason, you can. But it seems to me the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam both say it's mutter lechatchila to ask a yid to do it if he hasn't brought in Shabbos. I'm not sure which one is better. Possibly better to ask a yid because for him he hasn't started Shabbos at all. I'm not sure. By the way, it seems to be mutter lechatchila. Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam say there's no problem to do such a thing. It could be, yeah. Okay, so. When the Shulchan Aruch brings this in the end of Sun Reish Samach Gimel, so the Darkei Moshe, that's the Ramah on the Torah, asks a very interesting question. He brings a fascinating Maram Rutenberg, which is brought to the end of the Hilchos Yom Kippur. So the last simon in Hilchos Yom Kippur, Tav Reish Chaf Dalet, the Ramah quotes this, and he asks us a question, and he says like this. So the Torah brings down Chassidim v'Anshei Ma'aseh b'Ashkenaz. He says that in his day there were Chassidim and Anshei Ma'aseh who lived in Ashkenaz. So he says, "Regilin la'aseh shnei yomim yom haKippurim shemisan shnei yomim." And these people used to fast for 2 days on Yom Kippur. And he says, "L'fa'omim hayom in asara." Sometimes there were even 10 of them. "V'hayom espalalin ba'asara kachol seidim haKippurim." There's a whole minyan. They had 2 days Yom Kippur. Not only would they fast, but they would even have minyonim of 2 days Yom Kippur. And he says, "Adoni Avi Arash, I am Moicha Biyodam." My father, the Rosh, would object to them doing this. And then he says, "Aval Shakal Dava of Issam Loch Anogin Kamarish." And he says, even though the Rosh would object to them davening, they still used to fast for 2 days. And the Torah says, "Hilka Chafilo Acherim Lo Yavash Lulay." And he says, people shouldn't cook for these people who are keeping 2 days Yom Kippur. So let me just summarize what's happening here. So these people used to keep 2 days Yom Kippur. Why do they keep 2 days Yom Kippur? So on the one hand, it makes a lot of sense because we keep 2 days Sukkos. Why do we keep 2 days Sukkos? Because of the minhag of the times when they didn't know when on which day Yom Tov was fixed. Because they were unsure, they would keep 2 days. Even after we know, we still have minhag of Yisena B'Yodenu. And if you think about it, if they didn't know when Sukkos was, then they definitely did not know when Yom Kippur was. Yom Kippur came before Sukkos. So, if we're keeping 2 days Sukkos, it makes sense to keep 2 days Yom Kippur. However, we're told that they have sakana because it's dangerous to fast for 2 days, so we never kept 2 days Yom Kippur. In fact, as I saw in the Minchas Chinuch, I think he says that even when they really didn't know, and that was even when there's a real Sofei because the messengers hadn't arrived, he says they still wouldn't keep 2 days because they would rely on a chazakah. It was very rare that Elul was 30 days. So they really were quite confident when Rosh Hashanah was, and they relied on that not to have to fast 2 days Yom Kippur, even though they would keep 2 days Sukkos. So really the halacha is we don't need to keep 2 days Yom Kippur. However, there were these chassidim who would be machmeh, who would fast for 2 days Yom Kippur. And the Torah says that if you had one of these people in your community who was keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, you were not allowed to cook for him on his second day Yom Kippur. That means the vast majority of people were already busy getting ready for Sukkos on the 11th of Tishri. They weren't keeping Yom Kippur. But there was one or two people keeping Yom Kippur. Somebody who was not keeping Yom Kippur was not allowed to cook for somebody who was keeping Yom Kippur on the second day. In other words, he wasn't allowed to ask you to do work, and you had to sort of treat it as a Yom Kippur for that person, with regards to the other person who was being machmir on the second day. So ask the Ramah, so what's the difference between the case that we mentioned before and this case? How come, if one person starts keeping Shabbos early, they're allowed to ask another person who hasn't kept Shabbos, who hasn't started keeping Shabbos, to do work for them? On the other hand, somebody who's keeping 2 days Yom Kippur definitely cannot ask somebody else who's not keeping 2 days Yom Kippur to do work for them on the 11th of Tishri. What's the difference? The Shabbos, if you have one person sort of being machmir, starting Shabbos, he can ask somebody else to do work for him. When it comes to the second day Yom Kippur, if somebody is keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, he cannot ask, and the other people can't volunteer, to do work for him. So the Rama asks, what's the difference between these two cases? Okay, everyone understand the question? Okay, so the Rama says like this. The Rama says there's a difference. When somebody starts keeping Shabbos early, so he starts keeping Shabbos, but he recognizes that there's no reason for anyone else to start keeping Shabbos early. He's decided to be Mekabel Shabbos from Plaga Mincha, but he recognizes that there's no reason for his neighbor who hasn't started Shabbos to keep Shabbos. So therefore, he's allowed to ask somebody else to do work for him because that person has no reason to be keeping Shabbos. However, when it comes to the second day Yom Kippur, it's quite a fine distinction here. The person who's keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, so chosid v'ishmaase, who's keeping the second day Yom Kippur, it's true he recognizes that no one else, very few people, are going to be that machmir to keep a second day Yom Kippur, and I'm sure he wouldn't expect other people to keep the second day Yom Kippur. However, according to this thing that he's doing, that Yom Kippur should be 2 days, if that's correct, then really everyone should be doing the same thing as him. Even though he's not expecting everyone to keep this chumrah, according to the thing that he's doing on the second day Yom Kippur, everyone should really be keeping it if there were 2 days Yom Kippur. In other words, it's less subjective than the case of somebody starting Shabbos early, because when somebody starts Shabbos early, there's no reason for anyone else to do it. Here, there is a reason, just people don't do it. It's not the accepted minhag. Okay, so that's a very subtle distinction between the case of Yom Kippur and somebody keeping Shabbos early. I hope I've explained it clearly enough. So the Rama says, when it comes to Yom Kippur, since the person being machmir, according to his chumrah, really everyone could keep the 2 days, just they're not going to be that machmir, so therefore he's not allowed to ask other people to do work for him on the second day Yom Kippur. Okay. Now, says the Aruch HaShabbos, let's apply this back to the question that we started off with. So we said, if you have somebody who is machmir and when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, let's say he doesn't open metal bottle tops on Shabbos, can he ask somebody who does open them to open it for him on Shabbos? So says the Aruch HaShabbos like this. So what case is that comparable to? So he says, that's comparable to the case of Yom Kippur. Because if somebody is machmir, somebody doesn't do something on Shabbos, so it's not just that he sort of started Shabbos early. It's not that there's no reason in the world for anyone else to do the same thing as him. According to the thing he's doing, the chumrah that he's doing, the tzad issur that he is doing, really everyone could be doing the same thing as him. It's just that they don't because their rov, or they've learned the sugya, has told them that you're allowed to do it. But according to the approach of this person who says it's asur, really everyone could be doing the same thing as him. And therefore, he says that somebody who decides not to do something on Shabbos because they hold it's asur, they cannot ask somebody else to do that thing for them, similar to the case of somebody who is being very machmir and keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, but we can apply that logic to the case of somebody who has a chumrah where he doesn't do something on Shabbos, he cannot ask somebody else to do it for him on Shabbos.
At least Shabbos has not yet come in.
Yeah.
But here, when it comes to these bottle tops, Shabbos already come in. So you have to be strict there.
You have to be strict. So yeah, that's what he's saying. Yeah, it's not similar to a case of somebody who's brought Shabbos in early. There, we're makel because it's Shabbos only for that person. But here, where it's Shabbos for everyone, and the person who's not doing something recognizes that in theory everyone could be behaving like him. So therefore, he's not allowed to ask somebody else to do it. Okay. Yeah, right. So then the Aruch HaShabbos says like this. So when do we apply this, he says, that's where he really thinks it's asur. And, you know, there's no situation where he would, let's say, open the bottle top on Shabbos or do that thing. If somebody does it as a chumrah, in other words, they try not to. For instance, he brings an example, somebody who keeps Rabbeinu Tam Motzei Shabbos. That means, you know, when it comes to Motzei Shabbos, the time of Shabbos going out, so there are different times. And Rabbeinu Tam has a later time for when Shabbos goes out. And some people keep Rabbeinu Tam as a chumrah. In other words, they try to keep it, but if need be, then they wouldn't be so machmir to keep Rabbeinu Tam time on Motzei Shabbos. So he says that
it should be the same as bringing in Shabbos early, keeping the extra time between.
So he says it's different, because bringing Shabbos in early, you're doing it as an optional extra. You're starting Shabbos early, but you recognize no one else has to. But when it comes to Rabbeinu Tam, if Rabbeinu Tam is right, then everyone should be keeping Shabbos to that time, because you can't do melacha before the end of the Shabbos. So he says, if you keep Rabbeinu Tam because you, for everything, so then he says that really you shouldn't ask somebody else who's already made Havdalah to do work for you. However, if you keep it as a chumrah, and others, you try to keep Rabbeinu Tam, but sometimes in certain other situations you wouldn't be keeping Rabbeinu Tam. So then he says, well, if it's only a chumrah, but you'd be lenient sometimes. So then he says you could be lenient for other people to ask them to do work for you, even though it's before the end of Rabbeinu Tam Nach. So to summarize, the Orach Shabbos says that if you really keep something as an issa, as you'd never be makel, then you shouldn't ask somebody to do it for you. However, if you are machmir, but sometimes you would be lenient, then you can ask somebody else to do this thing for you. So this is the opinion of the Orach Shabbos. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says something slightly different. I'll share with you what he says. I don't understand it fully. I don't have a clear guidelines of what he's saying. I'll share with you the words that he uses. So Rav Shlomo Zalman says that somebody asked Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach a similar case. They asked him about a situation in Hilchos Shabbos. There's something called Chazara on Shabbos. So if you take a pot, let's say take a pot of chicken soup off the fire, you can put it back on, provided you have all the conditions, you have the fire's covered, you've got your intent to put it back, you're holding it, the food's fully cooked, etc. And one of the conditions, if it's liquid, is that the liquid hasn't cooled down. But there's a difference between the Shulchan Aruch and Sfaradim and the Ramah and Ashkenazim. For Sfaradim, if the liquid food has cooled down below Yad Saled as well, let's say 40 degrees, then they cannot put it back on the fire. For Ashkenazim, we are more makel, and we say as long as the liquid is warm, you can still put it back on the fire. So somebody asked Rav Shlomo Zalman, let's say you have an Ashkenazi and a Sephardi. For the Sephardi, he would not be able, let's say it's cooled down, but it's not cold. So the Sephardi would not be able to put the pot back on the fire. The Ashkenazi would be able to, following the Ramah. So they asked him, would the Sephardi be able to ask the Ashkenazi to put the food back on the fire? And Rav Shlomo Zalman answered like this. He says, Ima machmeh soiveh mekoch hachro osoidos. If the person being machmeh, holds, because he's been machriya, I think it's because he really thinks it's osu, then he says, mistabe, it's logical, shekam tzorech lasho lelifnei. If somebody really holds something's osu on Shabbos, then you wouldn't be able to ask somebody else to do it for you on Shabbos. However, he says, aval imrak machmir al atzmai, if he's just being machmir on himself, mipnei minag avoysov, because of the minag of his fathers, his ancestors, oyrab boysov, or his rebbes, then he says, ein lochosh lifnei, you don't have to worry about lifnei iver, he comes there shenayag issa, because the person who's noyag issa, yodeya shechaveru ein sorich lahachmir kamayz. He knows that the other person doesn't have to be machmir like him. The cholechal kamayz avoysa, everyone should follow the minhag of his father's family or rebbe's. So he says like this. He says, if the person really believes something's asa, you can't ask somebody else to do it for you. However, if you're just doing it because that's the minhag of your family, of your rebbe's, then you can ask somebody else to do this thing for you. And so I'm unsure exactly what the guidelines for that is. And let's say, we mentioned the idea of Rabbeinu Tam. You have somebody who lives in Kiryat Sons in the Tanya. So they're very machmir on Rabbeinu Tam. The Kloisenberg Rebbe was very machmir on Rabbeinu Tam. So what's the case of somebody living there and keeping the chumras of that place? Is that called he's keeping the Rabbeinu Tam because that's the minhag of his family or his Rebbe's? Well, you know, on the other hand, if he would ask the Kleuzer Berg Rebbe, he would tell him that this is the real halacha. The Rebbe Natam is many Rishonim like Rebbe Natam. That's the main. That's the ikar halacha. So as I said, I'm unsure exactly what Rabbi Shlomo Zalman means over here, but he does make this distinction. And there's a difference between somebody really believing as us and somebody just doing that because that's the way his minhag of his family or his rabbis. Yeah. So if we're saying you can't ask him, and the person does it of their own accord, you cannot have hanor from it, unless they're doing it for themselves. If they, say the example of a bottle top, so let's say you don't open a bottle, somebody else does, and we're following this, so the Aruch HaShabbos, who says you shouldn't ask somebody who does to open it for you. Even if he jumps in and decides to open it for you, he says you shouldn't benefit from it, unless they've opened it for themselves. If they've opened it for themselves, then in the same way that if a goy would do work for himself, then afterwards you'd be allowed to benefit from it. So too, if somebody who holds something's mutter does it for himself, you'd be allowed to benefit from it afterwards.
I bought the soup back for myself and then I bought the
business. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. As long as you're doing it for yourself, you're not doing it for that person. Similar to what we said with Yom Kippur, the person keeping 2 days Yom Kippur, the other people weren't allowed to cook for him on the 11th of Tishri. They weren't allowed to volunteer to do work for him. So the same idea. Okay, a similar idea, a similar question is, I'm not going to go into all the details of this, but if you have somebody who is a chutznik going to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov, on Yom Tov Sheni, so you have somebody keeping 2 days Yom Tov in Eretz Yisrael on the second day Yom Tov, so there's also a lot of discussion, a very similar discussion, about whether the person keeping the second day Yom Tov can ask a Ben Eretz Yisrael who's not keeping Yom Tov to do work for him on that day. And it's a very similar discussion where you have two Jewish people, one not doing something, one yes doing something for legitimate reasons. Can the person who is not doing the thing ask the other person to do it for him? Again, there are many different opinions on either side with this question of Yom Tov Sheni. Okay, so earlier we said that this question has two components to it. On the one hand, there's the question of can you ask somebody to do work for you? And then we said there's a question of lifnei iver. That means, if I hold something as asur, and somebody else holds something as mutter, am I allowed to present him with the opportunity to do this thing? Is that called a lifnei iver? If I hold something as asur, I'm not allowed to present him with the opportunity to do this thing, even though he holds it is mutter. So, the question is discussed by the Mabit and the Ksav Sofer. Let me share with you first what the Ksav Sofer says. The Ksav Sofer says like this. Imagine a Nozir is invited to the house of his friend, who is not a Nozir. Now, the Nozir obviously is not allowed to have grape juice, he's not allowed to have wine. So is he allowed to dine at his friend's house, who may put wine in the food? In other words, can the Nozir rely on his friend to inform him of what has wine and what doesn't? Now, of course, when he goes for a Shabbos meal, so of course he can see what he's making Kiddush on, the Nozir can ask for whiskey instead of wine for Kiddush. But can the Nozir be confident that this person didn't put any wine in the steak, for instance, in the meat? Can the Nozir rely on this other person to tell him? So the Rishonim say that we can rely on other people to inform us of what food they are giving us. In other words, we trust another person who's keeping halacha to inform us of something that we may not be allowed to have. So the Nozir can be confident when he goes to this other person's house that this person will inform him if anything has any ingredients containing wine or grape extracts which he is not allowed to have. However, that's with the Nozir. Now, what about somebody who is machmer on himself? And let's say you have a particular ingredient, which one person is machmir not to have, and another person is makel to have this thing. So can the person who is machmir eat at this other person's house, who is makel to have this? So we say, yes, he can. He is entitled to believe the other person, who have confidence that the other person who is makel, who is lenient, will not give him this thing that he holds as asa. Why is that? He can ask, yeah, but can he be confident that the person who is Mekel with asking. I mean, he should point it out that he has this chumrah, but can you rely on the other person to inform him? The answer is yes. Why is that? Because for somebody who is makel on something, someone who is lenient, there is a problem of lifnei iver to give that thing to somebody who is machmir. Somebody who is makel, holds something as mutter, he is not allowed to give this thing to somebody else who holds it as asa. How do we know this? There's a very interesting source for this. The Gemara in Yevamos, well-known Gemara, speaks about disagreements of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. And the Gemara says that there was a particular case at Tzaras Erevah in Yibum, where you had situations where there were children of certain marriages who were mamzerim according to Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai did not hold the Tzaras Erevah, and therefore they were not mamzerim according to Beis Shammai, and they were mamzerim according to Beis Hillel. This is the one Yevamos Daf Yud Daled. And therefore, there were situations where Beis Hillel would not be allowed to marry certain children because of the psak of Beis Shammai. Similarly, there were other arguments when it came to Kashrus, to Tumah and Tara, we're told. Not relevant nowadays, but in the days of Hillel Shammai, where they're keeping Tumah and Tara, there were certain cases where Beis Hillel was machmeh on certain things of Tumah, Beis Shammai were mekel, and there were cases where Beis Shammai wouldn't be able to eat the things of Beis Hillel that Beis Hillel had paskened on. So we're told that that they would inform each other which were the children that Beis Hillel would not be allowed to marry, and which were the food that Beis Shammai would not be allowed to eat. And there was Achav Areus, they all got on very well, and they all interacted. But the things that one held was Asa, so that group would inform the other one so that they wouldn't have it. So we learn from there that somebody who holds that something is Asa, somebody who holds something is mutter, I'm sorry, has to inform the other person who thinks it's asa. You're not, just because you think it's mutter, that doesn't mean you can give it to the other person. If that person thinks it's asa, you have to inform them. Now that's called lifnei iver. Even though you think it's mutter, since that other person thinks it's asa, you're not allowed to give it to them. And therefore, Beis Shammai would tell Beis Hillel who they were allowed to marry, what they were allowed to eat. And similarly, going back to our case, if somebody is makel on something, he has to inform the other person who is machmir and doesn't eat that particular thing.
You know, machmir about the kalim as well, so we'll be able to eat anything.
Yeah, okay, that's... Yeah, so that's a good point. Okay, well, obviously it's a case where the kalim were sent. Pardon?
Yeah, two things which are awesome, but don't ask for kalim.
They were separate Canaan. Okay?
And that approach you see, you mentioned that if you have compote and tin compote and cut grapes, it shall have been Nesach, he said.
Sorry, say that?
Nesach.
Yeah.
If you have grapes that have been cut in half, and they've gone and cut themselves,
yeah,
could be shall have Nesach.
Uh huh. Okay. Right. Okay, so now the Ksav Sofer, I apologize, it's going to get very complicated here. The Ksav Sofer makes the following distinction. What did we say? Somebody who holds something is mutter is not allowed to give that thing to somebody who thinks it's osa. Okay? Says the Ksav Sofer, however, if we reverse it, it's different. Somebody who holds something's osa is allowed to give that thing to somebody who thinks it's mutter. That is not called lifnei iver. There's a difference if we flip it around. I'm sorry, it's very complicated, but just try and understand. There's a difference between the two cases. Somebody who holds something is like Beis Hillel Beis Shammai. Somebody who holds something is mutter is not allowed to give that thing to somebody who thinks it's osa. Why? Because you have somebody who thinks it's osa. The food that he thinks is osa is he's going to eat. You're not allowed to give that to him. That would be lifnei iver. It's not fair on that person. It's lifnei iver to give it to him. However, if we flip it round, it's different. Somebody who thinks something is osa and another person thinks it's mutter, you're allowed to give that thing to him. The person who thinks it's osa is allowed to give that thing to him because according to him, it's mutter. And therefore, if you have a bottle top and you don't open bottle tops on Shabbos, but your friend does open the bottle tops on Shabbos, you're allowed to give it to him for him to open. That's not called lifnei iver. There's a difference, because in the case where you're giving him the bottle top and he can open it and he thinks it's mutter, he's doing nothing wrong. And therefore, you're allowed to give it to him for him to open. There's no lifnei iver if you think it's osur and that person thinks it's mutter. However, the other way around, if you think it's mutter and he thinks it's osur, that is lifnei iver to give it to him.
So can he drink it? The one who thinks it's osur, after the one who's mekul,
yeah.
Can he?
If he's opening it for himself, then you can drink it afterwards. Okay. I'm sorry. It's a rather complicated sugya. But this is the chiluk that the ksav sofer makes. And therefore, if we get back to our case, as we've applied this to the case of the bottle tops, you would be allowed to give it to him to open. The mabit applies this case to Shemitah. There's a machlokes between the mabit and the shulchan aruch, which actually is very relevant nowadays, whether it's called peiros nochrim, these fruits which grow in Arab, in non-Jewish fields, whether kedusha shvius applies to these fruits. Does shmita only apply to fruit which grows in Jewish-owned fields, or does it apply to fruit owned by non-Jews as well? It's very relevant nowadays, where they get fruit from Gaza, from places which are owned by Arabs during Shmita. And so the big machlokas, the Mabit said it does have Kedusha Shmita. The Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Kaira, said it does not. They lived in the same time in Sfat, by the way. The Mabit was the Avbeisin after Rabbi Yosef Kaira. Nowadays, the Badat in Yerushalayim are Mekel. They bring fruit in from non-Jewish fields, whereas in Bnei Brak, following the Chazanish, they are more Machmeh. So the Mabit speaks about a case where you have somebody who follows the Shulchan Aruch who held there was no Kedusha of Shmita, and somebody who followed his Psak where there was Shmita. And again, he says that somebody who holds that it does have the Kedusha of Shmita, he's allowed to give this fruit to somebody who holds it doesn't. And that's not called Lifnei Iver if somebody else is more Mekel and you are more Machmeh. So, just finish by sort of reiterating what the Gemara in Yevamos said, that we said even though we started by saying that ideally the Sanhedrin should be able to be machriya, that there shouldn't be machlokas, we mentioned that the Gemara tells us that in the future there will be machlokas, asidah torah tshetishdakach miYisrael, and the Gemara, the Mishnah in Chagiga tells us when machlokas really started with Hillel Shammai, with the earlier Zugas, at the beginning there were a few machlokas in, and this was a very tragic day for Kol Yisrael when there started to be these machlokas in Halacha. But nonetheless, we're told that Hillel and Shammai, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, they would interact, they had a very good relationship, there was Chibo Vareus, the Gemara says, Emes B'Shalom Ehovu was the lesson we learned from Hillel and Shammai, that even though they had their disagreements, but there was never got personal, and that there still was ava between them. There's a vort of the Chasam Sofer. He says that Tamidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. Tamidei Chachamim increase Shalom in the world. How do they do that? He says there's a certain amount of machlokas which descends to this world, and when we use up the machlokas in arguments of halacha, then we decrease machlokas in other areas. So therefore, the Tamidei Chachamim have their machlokas in halacha, they're marbim shalom because they're taking all the machlokas and channeling it in to the halacha. And as we said, just because there's a disagreement in the halacha doesn't mean that there will be a disagreement on a personal level. And the Rambam tells us, we leaned in at the end of the Haftarah of Shabbos Chazon, says, V'ashiva shoftayach gevar shayna, HaKadosh Baruch will bring back the shoftim, V'yatzayach gevar tchila, Oz yikari lecha erit tzedek. So the Rambam says, before Moshiach comes, before yikari lecha erit tzedek, we will have a case of V'ashiva shoftayach gevar shayna, HaKadosh Baruch will bring back the Sanhedrin. First of all, as we say, Tekun, we say it stands for Tishbi, Yitaretz, Kushas, Leibois. We look forward to the Simon Elion of you. We'll come back when the Sanhedrin will be here, and we will no longer have any more machlokas. Meher of Yomein.
What's Shabbat about?
Yeah.